Trump threatens to close the border. The New York State Attorney General passes on indictments in the killing of Saheed Vassil and student hunger at CUNY. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, March 29th, 2019. And President Donald Trump on Friday threatened to close America's southern border or large sections of it next week, a potentially drastic step affecting the economies of both the U.S. and Mexico if Mexico does not halt illegal immigration immediately. Trump has previously threatened to close the border, including at a rally in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Thursday night, but this time was different as he gave a timetable. The White House did not immediately respond to questions about whether his possible action would apply to commercial and air travel, but a substantial closure could have an especially heavy impact on cross-border communities from San Diego to South Texas, as well as supermarkets that sell Mexican produce, factories that rely on imported parts, and other businesses across the country. Trump spoke to reporters while in Florida, accompanied by Senator Marco Rubio.
So Mexico's tough. They can stop them, but they chose not to. Now they're going to stop them. And if they don't stop them, we're closing the border. They'll close it, and we'll keep it closed for a long time. I'm not playing games. Mexico has to stop it. They have people coming right through Mexico. It's a long, very dangerous journey. Mexico sends buses. They send trucks. They do absolutely. They started at one point a little bit stopping. They don't do anything to stop it right now. So the caravans form. I've ended payments to Guatemala, to Honduras, and to El Salvador. Oh, no money goes there anymore. We were giving them $500 million. We were giving them tremendous aid. We stopped payment to Honduras, to Guatemala, and to El Salvador. We were paying them tremendous amounts of money, and we're not paying them anymore because they haven't done a thing for us. They set up these caravans. In many cases, they put their worst people in the caravan. They're not going to put their best in. They get rid of their problems, and they march up here, and they're coming into their country. We're not letting them in our country. Our Border Patrol, the job they've done is incredible. The job that ICE is doing is incredible. And we have run out of space. We can't hold people anymore, and Mexico can stop it so easily.
The U.S. and Mexico trade about $1.7 billion in goods daily, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which said closing the border would be an unmitigated economic debacle that would threaten 5 million U.S. jobs. Trump's declaration came a day after Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador said his country was doing its part to fight migrant smuggling. And an autopsy has found that a 7-year-old girl from Guatemala died of a bacterial infection while detained by the U.S. Border Patrol in a case that drew worldwide attention to the plight of migrant families detained at the southern U.S. border. The El Paso County Medical Examiner's Office released a report Friday of its findings in the death of 7-year-old Jacqueline Call McQueen. Jacqueline died December 8th, just a day after she was apprehended by Border Patrol agents with her father. The report says traces of Streptococcus bacteria were found in Jacqueline's lungs, adrenal gland, liver, and spleen. The autopsy says she faced a rapidly progressive infection that led to the failure of multiple organs. After Jacqueline's death, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Migrants urged the U.S. not to detain migrants and called for a thorough investigation of her death. And hundreds of University of Michigan students filled out toe tags this week with information on each of the roughly 3,000 migrants who have died trying to sneak into the U.S. through the Sonoran Desert over the past 25 years and whose remains were found. The tags then went on a giant map of Arizona, tan for those who could be identified and orange for those who could not. The installation is a test run for anthropology professor Jason DeLeon's Hostile Terrain 94 project. DeLeon is hoping to have 94 such installations go up around the world in the run-up to the 2020 presidential election to call attention to what he believes is an inhumane 1994 U.S. immigration policy that made trying to cross the unforgiving desert the best or only option for many would-be migrants. De Leon, who collaborated on a previous exhibit that displayed belongings of migrants left in the desert, said making his work more accessible grows more important even as the environment in which he's doing it becomes more challenging. And in an apparent bid to kickstart the long-stalled Keystone XL oil pipeline, President Donald Trump on Friday issued a new presidential permit for the project, 2 years after he first approved it and more than a decade after it was first proposed. Trump said the permit issued Friday replaces one granted in March 2017. The order is intended to speed up development of the controversial pipeline, which could ship crude oil from tar sands in western Canada to the U.S. Gulf Coast. A federal judge blocked the project in November, saying the Trump administration had not fully considered potential oil spills and other impacts. U.S. District Judge Brian Morris ordered a new environmental review. After years of delay, former President Barack Obama rejected the project in 2015. Trump reversed that decision soon after taking office in 2017, saying the $8 billion project would boost American energy and create jobs. A presidential permit is needed because the project crosses a U.S. border. After environmental groups sued, Judge Morris said the administration had not fully considered the potential oil spills and other impacts and that further reviews were needed. And the website Politico reports that House Democrats introduced a resolution today, Friday, condemning President Donald Trump's support for a lawsuit that would strike down Obamacare. The resolution and looming vote are largely symbolic. It follows Trump's decision this week to urge the courts to throw out the entire Affordable Care Act. The Justice Department previously argued that parts of the law, like its protections for pre-existing conditions, should be struck down, but that much of the law should be preserved. Speaking Friday, Trump reiterated his claim the GOP will become the party of health care.
Obamacare is a disaster. We're going to have a plan that is so much better than Obamacare. So the health care is going very well.
Can we just ask about the lake, Mr. President? The funding for the lake?
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
You're going to always take care of pre-existing conditions. Just remember that. Always pre-existing conditions. But Obamacare is too costly for people. They can't afford it. And the deductible, which averages more than $7,000, meaning unless somebody's got really big problems, can't even use it. Obamacare is a disaster. Right now it's losing in court. Right now in the Texas court, as you know, probably ends up in the Supreme Court. But we're doing something that is going to be much less expensive than Obamacare for the people. I'm not saying government, I'm saying for the people. And we're going to have pre-existing conditions and we'll have a much lower deductible. So, and I've been saying it, the Republicans are going to end up being the party of health care.
Trump has been promising to come up with a replacement for the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, for more than 3 years. Congressional Republicans and Senator Mitch McConnell have said they don't want to reopen a congressional battle over the health plan. Democrats have seized on Trump's flip as a major issue in the 2020 presidential campaign. And in New York City, New York State Attorney General Letitia James passed on prosecuting NYPD officers involved in the shooting death of Saheed Vassell in Crown Heights last year. His father, Eric Vassell, said, "I'm saddened and very disappointed that the Attorney General is refusing to seek indictments and prosecutions of the NYPD officers who killed my son." He continued, "The Attorney General has a responsibility to prosecute police in cases of police killings like the one that cost my son his life, both for unjust killings like what happened to Saheed and for the related misconduct and police cover-up that surrounds these killings." The Attorney General's office has been investigating the killing of Saheed Vassell since April 2018 as a special prosecutor in the case. In a news release, the family said that on April 4, 2018, Saheed Vassell, an unarmed son, father, brother, and beloved Crown Heights member, was killed by NYPD officers from the Hyper-Militarized Strategic Response Group and plainclothes unit in broad daylight in a hail of at least 10 bullets, adding that the death happened on the 50th anniversary of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination. They say 4 out of 5 officers on the scene reportedly shot at Saheed immediately upon arriving and exiting their cars. The family also accused the NYPD of leaking derogatory information about Saheed in the days after the shooting, and they blame Mayor Bill de Blasio and NYPD for refusing to release the names of the officers involved. The shooting was carried out by officers with the NYPD Strategic Response Group, a rapid reaction force of the NYPD set up in 2015 by Commissioner William Bratton. In addition to standard police gear, its officers are equipped with ballistic helmets, M4 carbines, and riot shields. The family has joined a chorus of criminal justice advocates who want the Strategic Response Group banned from responding to emergencies with emotionally disturbed persons. And according to a new report, approximately half of students attending City University of New York schools have experienced going hungry or have been without a safe place to live. The report released Wednesday by the Hope Center for College Community and Justice at Temple University discovered the findings by conducting a hashtag Real College survey of nearly 22,000 students at 19 CUNY campuses. It found that 49% of students went hungry in the last month, while 55% had been without a secure place to live in the last year. Additionally, 14% of students said they were homeless at some point over the last year. One common finding between this report and a report earlier this year on college food insecurity by the U.S. Government Accountability Office was that many students who are eligible for public assistance aren't actually getting support from those programs. Sarah Goldrick Rapp, a professor at Temple University, says the problem of student hunger has long been ignored.
That's because college students are typically thought of as being privileged. These data show that CUNY students are not privileged.
Students who are veterans, former foster children, those who were convicted of a crime, identify as LGBTQ, or are African American, have a higher risk of insecurity about their basic needs, according to the report. And when Attorney General William Barr releases a redacted version of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on the Russia investigation, several publishers will be ready to put it out in book form. Barr notified congressional leaders Friday that he expects the report out by mid-April. Mueller submitted his findings, nearly 400 pages, last week, adding Friday that material removed will include information about ongoing investigations and sensitive sources. Barr added Trump would not get a sneak peek at the report in advance. Government studies are not copyrighted and can be published by anyone. Melville House, Skyhorse Publishing, and Scribner, in conjunction with the Washington Post, are among those with print and digital editions planned within 2 weeks or less of the report coming out. The Skyhorse book will include an introduction by attorney Alan Dershowitz, a frequent Trump defender. The Scribner release will feature commentary from the Post staff. Some government publications have become best-selling books, notably the Warren Commission report on President John F. Kennedy's assassination and the Star report on President Bill Clinton's affair with White House intern Monica Lewinsky. An edition of the 9/11 Commission study published in 2004 was a million seller and a finalist for the National Book Awards. And that's some of the news for Friday, but we're not going to go off right now. What we're going to do is spend the next 10 or 12 minutes taking your calls, because we have an opportunity for talkback. Talkback to the news, me, Paul DiRienzo, our news room, which includes Linda Perry, who wears many hats around here, and the other reporters who come in and help us and do great work here in support of the WBAI Evening News, which is often heard at WBAI Morning News at 6 a.m. And so our number is 212-209-2877. And I'm most interested of the news, and there's a lot of interesting news today. We just got to a fraction of the news. We were discussing just a moment ago, I was discussing with Reggie, our engineer, that that there was a return march, a march in support of the right of return marches, which have been assaulted by Israeli troops on the border of Gaza over the last number of months and year, leading to many, many injuries and deaths. Folks, thousands, it looked like we couldn't count the numbers, but on the internet, it looked like hundreds, if not thousands of people, a lot. We're using the word in quotes, a lot of people were joining that rally and were marching. But to me, yeah, we're going to take that call. Thank you. The most interesting is the story about CUNY hunger and homelessness. I think that's something that needs a lot more investigation. And we have the first person on the line. Welcome to WBAI. Your brief comment or question, please.
Yes, thank you so very much. I just love this news. Linda Perry is doing a great job getting programming. I wish alternative radio Project Censored and Against the Grain were playing, and she finds a spot for them instead of duplicating some programs. But in any case, I really like this. I think I like what your whole gist of your news show, too. I really appreciate this. And
what is that? Could you tell me what is the gist of my news show?
Well, it's you're reporting on alternative perspectives on the news that we hear in other places. And it's wonderful, though. That's always the gist. It's something different and good for us to hear and informative, and it gives the other point of view, the other side of the story, which that on-the-ground show that preceded yours did, this Walter Hickson said it all about, everything you were saying today. In fact, he said it all. I don't know if you heard this man speak before you. On
unfortunately,
that
that's difficult. I mostly get to just kick them out when I come in to do the news report, so I don't get to hear people often from the inside position. But I can go home and listen on our archives, which I can also remind listeners that you can go to WBAI.org, click on archives, and then you can hear a show. We have another call coming in. Oh, not yet. It's all right. So we can spend some more time with you, this caller. What region are you calling from?
I'm calling from Long Island, dear. And Esther Adair, I don't know how to pronounce her last name. She does a dynamite show before your show. Well, you're on every day, so that's wonderful. But on your Fridays, so very great.
All right, great.
Everything is very, I like it.
All right, thank you very much. And are you a BAI buddy by chance?
No, I'm not. But you know what? I do work for the channel, and I'm trying to raise money for you. And I have a website that Save WBAI.
All right, thank you very much.
Webs.com.
Save WBAI. Thank you very much.
And also, webs.com.
All right. And you can also pledge to WBAI anytime by going on the internet to give to WBAI.org and become a WBAI buddy. And that way you can spread out a subscription over a number of months. And we have another call coming in. Our number is 212-209-2877. I'm Paul DiRienzo. This is the News Talk Back on Friday afternoon. Hi, and you're on the air. Welcome to WBAI.
Hi there. I just want to say, excellent news show. I appreciate the part about Donald Trump.
Thank you. No, it's okay. Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate your calling and the effort that you're putting into becoming part of WBAI. Thank you so much for that. And, you know, I always consider the most radical part of our community to be the differently abled. And so thank you for joining us. And you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Rose from Flemington, New Jersey. And I have a stupid question because I can't look it up. I'm sightless.
No such thing as a stupid question.
The president has suggested that he's going to have three people advisors to his new plan for Obamacare. And one of them was Mr. Scott. Is that the same Mr. Scott who ripped off Medicaid and then got the largest fine ever, accepted no responsibility, and used his $500 million bailout to get to be the governor and now the senator? Is that the same guy?
I don't know, but I'll look it up. I'll be happy to look it up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think this is very important.
Okay, for Mr. Trump.
Take it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because he just made an appointment to the Federal Reserve Board that was like so totally out of crazy field that even the conservatives are upset about it.
Yeah, I was going to say that here in New Jersey, the disabled have not fared very well for a long time, especially under Chris Christie.
Right. I understand that. I don't know what we could expect from a man who thought it was okay and acceptable to mock a disabled New York Washington Post reporter, like a New York Times reporter.
Oh, yeah. This guy's called the rolling gas chambers now, you know?
Oh, right.
Like
Germany. Yeah, well, they're making it clear, aren't they? And that's why I mentioned that we always – I always want to make special – you know, we have to cover the issues, whether it like be the elevators that work – that don't work in the subway and the ways of accessibility. And these kind of issues are key issues, I think, of our time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
They are. Accessibility is not a minor issue. It's like a major issue of our time and whether all people have access to public facilities that they pay for. And why shouldn't they have access? The law says they should, and now they're being denied. 212-209-2877 is our studio line. This is WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo. And this is our talk back when we get to talk to you. And answer your questions and find out what you feel about the news. And we're always open to those, to your comments. Again, 212-209-2877. As I said, one of the most interesting story, and we had some interesting stories tonight. To me, the most interesting story was the report that from the Hope Center for College Community and Justice at Temple University that discovered that nearly 22,000 thousand students, 22,000 students at 19 CUNY campuses are suffering from real hunger. It found that 49% of students went hungry in the last month, while 55% had been without a secure place to live in the past year, and that 14% of students said they were homeless at some point in the last year. This is our students, and you know, the fact that students are often slagged as like somehow a privileged group, when in fact there seems to be at 50% hungry, and we had reports, and I've seen reports up to this time of students saying that they literally live in stress and terror of not being able to find a meal at times in their lives as students. So, you know, what's going on? I think that the fact that this is getting so little coverage, you know, why are these students, first of all, having to pay any tuition at all if they can't afford food in a public university, a public college like City University of New York, which is a tradition of being free, and now they're sticking them with, what is it, $300, $400 a credit, you know, and saying that that's good because it's not $20,000 or $40,000 a semester is ridiculous. We want to have opportunity for higher education for all in New York, and there's just been too much from the bottom levels where they are shuffling people off to charter schools, while siphoning funds that should be going to our regular general schools that the vast majority of students go to, just so that people can feel that they're better off, is ridiculous. We've been talking about education here for a while, and the level of New York City's most segregated school system in America, it seems. All right, you're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI.
Oh, thank you, Paul. I love listening to you. I also wanted to say, too, that the thing I love about the AI is the fact that when I listen to the rest of the news, for the most part, I mean, the thing that thing was pretty funny, what Jimmy played about with Rachel Maddow, because I love Rachel, but how many times can you talk about Russia?
Right,
but
they tried to. To me, it's like there's a bit of a Kool-Aid problem there, because you know, the general feeling is, oh, because of decades of demonizing the Soviet Union and Russia, it'll be easy just to say, you know, these people with a funny accent that seem a little bit mysterious to us are really behind everything. It's a bad mistake. We don't need people hating each other because of their national origin.
I agree with you 100%. Also, too, I am so sick to death of these reporters on a lot of these stations who stand there, ask Trump a question, and he'll tell them almost like a child to hush. Let me talk.
And he's the big baby. He's the big baby. We have to go. There's only a couple minutes left. We got a couple of calls, but thank you so much for that. And you're on the radio. Go ahead. We don't have much time. This is your chance. All right, we're gonna have to move on to the next one. Sorry about that. And you're on the air. Hi,
Paul.
How you doing?
My man. I go back a long way with you, Paul.
Oh, really? Great. You go back to the Let 'Em Talk days, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Great.
Check this out, Paul. Do you still have that contact with Ibogaine?
Oh yeah, we still work with Ibogaine quite a bit. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow. I think I'm gonna be, as far as I know, I'm gonna be on the air tomorrow from 8 to 9, sitting in for on the Katie Halper show while she's away on some business. So, whatever the thing is. And so I'll be there temporarily. I'll be there tomorrow at 8 for an hour. And we can talk more about this kind of, you know, tune in if you're near a radio, and we're going to talk a lot more about Ibogaine.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, good. That's a good opportunity for that. And as we have another call, and you're on the radio. We only got a minute, 2 minutes left. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello?
Yes, go on. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling to make a comment back to the comment that you made about the disabled, that they should have access to public places that they pay for.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree with that, but I wanted to bring your attention to a group of disabled that everybody ignores, and that's the electromagnetically sensitive. And I just want to tell you that the MTA will not provide a train car free of Wi-Fi for the people that can't ride the train when people are using Wi-Fi on their phones.
Mm.
And the public libraries all have Wi-Fi, and they will not provide 2 hours where they turn them off.
Isn't that the public can use it. In Europe, they're already doing that, right? In other cities? Are there any places that are in the lead on this?
Nobody's accommodating the electromagnetic sensitivity.
Oh, I thought I read somewhere no. Is there a movement around this that we should know about?
Well, there's a group called Citizens for 5G Awareness out on Long Island. And there's also another group called Telecom Power Grab out on Long Island. And they're connected with groups across the country and are lobbying in D.C. right now because of the densification of all of these 5G small cells are making it impossible for some people to even live in their homes anymore. And they actually have to leave their homes because of it.
Oh. And is there a contact information or is there a website?
Sure. There's Citizens for 5G Awareness. .com. It's either .com or .org. I'm sorry, I don't remember. They also have a Facebook site, which is called Citizens for 5G Awareness. And Telecom Power Grab is just Telecom Power Grab, and I believe it's .org, but it might be .com.
We're coming to the end, but could you briefly tell me what are the symptoms? How do you know that you're sensitive to 5G?
Well, it wouldn't just be 5G, and it actually could be called microwave sickness. And it's the same symptoms that the radar operators started having in World War II in the submarines. Headaches, dizziness, depression, unclear thinking, short-term memory problems. You could have burning on your hands, burning when you're near these things, on your face, fatigue.
Have you experienced these symptoms? Yourself? Are you all?
I'm not here to talk about myself.
Okay. All right. So I'm just curious getting a firsthand report because this is relatively new to me. And although I have read some stuff about it, and we just want to know more about it, I guess.
Well, there is a wonderful website called the Environmental Health Trust, and they're located out in California, and they've been working on this issue for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is sensitive to this, and it causes diabetes. It compromises the blood-brain barrier. It goes without saying that if your blood-brain barrier is compromised.
All right. Okay, we're going to leave it at that. That's very interesting. Thank you very much, caller. And that's some of the news. It was an interesting story, and we broke something new, and we're going to look into it for sure. And that's some of the news for Friday, March 29, 2019. The news was engineered by Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Really, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it. And we'll be here after the weekend. Check the news. We're going to be doing like a news light on 8 p.m. on Saturday, so hope to see you then. Take care.